Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host Han Tran. Han, how are you?
I am marvelous, Jim, just simply marvelous. And how are
Excellent.
You?
Doing well. Welcome to all our listeners, Straight Talk, episode number 58. Tonight, we're going to do questions and answers. Questions from our listeners. We like to say, you ask, we answer. And that really is, you know, we collected up some of the questions that have come in, some of the things that we have been asked over the phone, just all the good things that we felt might be comfortable and appropriate, especially very helpful to share with you on the air. It's actually, Han, I know you and I talked about this, but this is actually one of the funnest type of shows that at least I know you and I like to do because there's, you know, it's that interesting interaction, but
kind of relaxed,
like we're relaxed, but we feel like we're really helping. You know, we're helping to answer a specific question. So please feel free. Don't be shy. Send us those emails. Give us a call. That's really why we're here. That's why we're doing the show. That's why, you know, Han and I take out the time during the day, or in this case, the evening, every Tuesday night to be able to support what you need in the way of, solve a problem. So with that, let's just jump right into it because we've only got an hour. And you folks that have listened to us before know that Han and I let's put it this way. We tend to talk a lot. Go ahead, Han. What's your first question?
That's funny, Jim. We're not Kathy, so we're not chatty, all right? anyway, the first question, and this, I think this one is it covers a few bases, and I think it's just a matter of how detailed or technical you want to look at it. Because I heard the term proposal, bid, and estimate often used in the same sentence. So the question is, what is the difference? Could you elaborate into that a little bit, the difference between an estimate, a proposal, and a bid? You want to give it a shot?
Absolutely. Well, and Han, you're right. This question or these three terms have been used interchangeably and actually incorrectly in so many places that it becomes difficult for a lot of people to really even understand what they're being told, especially if you're not very familiar with the construction industry or the design world or architecture and construction and how that all goes together. But when you look at a proposal, let's start with that one. A proposal is, in a nutshell, where you are given a price, whatever that price might be, for a certain task. So in our world, a proposal is where you come to us, you say, Han, Jim, I'd like to design a new facility. I'd like it to be of this size, let's say 6 operatories. I'd like it to be a brand new facility located on this piece of property. And I would like it to have these kind of things within it, say 6 operatories, sterilization, lobby, so on and so on and so forth. We'll go down through the whole process. During that, we then prepare our proposal. Now, our proposal is this is what we're going to do for you in the dental architect relationship, and this is how what we're going to design, and here's the steps, here's the timing, and here's the fee. So you will know what to expect from us along with what you're going to pay for that. And there's a lot of different particulars about that, but that's in essence what a proposal is. So we propose to do this, and then that means we're going to do these tasks, give you these end results, meaning these kind of documents, so you know what you're going to get. Now, a bid is really different in the sense that this is really something that's in the construction world or time frame. The most common use of the word bid or bidding is when you have a contractor or a subcontractor or an equipment supplier or someone who is giving you or providing you pieces and parts, items, construction of items, those kind of things. That's where you get a bid. Now, the bidding process has to be bid around something. Well, that something is a set of documents, a set of architectural construction drawings, something that you're getting a bid around. Where you run into trouble, and Han, you and I have talked about this numerous times throughout the year plus that we've been on the show, is the confusion between the bid construction proposal, and especially when it runs into the world of the design build companies. The design build world, it just happens too much that they confuse everything in there, and that confusion actually lends to you, the owner, losing a lot of control and of exactly what you're going to get. You don't know exactly what you're going to get. You don't know how you're going to get it. And what is that bid based around? And Han, what was the third item that was in that? You got a
estimate.
Estimate.
Estimate, proposal, and bid.
Yeah. So the estimate is, again, during the most likely the construction process, the estimate is where a contractor, now of course it could be an architect as well, or any other design professional, could give you an estimate of what the probable cost might be to do something. But that probable cost is going to be something of a, you don't know the scope. You don't know exactly what they're talking about unless you give them a document to say, give me an estimate based upon this document. A lot of times an estimate is where a contractor will come out, look at your building, kind of hear what you're going to say you'd like to do, and say, okay, I'll write up an estimate and give you an estimate. Well, those are extremely hard to compare in an apples-to-apples basis because each person, contractor, service provider, whomever, is going to interpret your needs differently. So one estimate compared to another estimate could be vastly different in cost, most likely because it's vastly different in the interpretation of what you're actually needing. So it of the three, it's the most inaccurate and also one that will give you potentially the biggest headaches. On what I miss.
Can I give you? Yeah. I think you've done a great job in explaining it. When I look at the term bid, proposal, and estimate, is somewhat similar in its scope because there's a lot of unknown. you can look at a task and say, my estimate is going to be this much because I think it's going to take this much time, this much material, and this is what it's going to cost to do that. So the term proposal and estimate can be interchangeably used. When it comes to bids, it's more defined. You are bidding, like you say, when you bid, there's multiple parties that's going to try to give you a number for a specific task that can be quantified. So everybody get a same document, bidding from the exact thing, an exact construction document. So that process is apple to apple comparison. If let's say a dentist go out and they need six dental chairs for their office, unless they say to the vendor that I need 6A that chair model XYZ, the number that come in could be six chairs from Belmont, six chairs from ADEC, six chairs from Summit, and they are a different manufacturer, different level of values, and so on and so on. Therefore, the number will be different. I think knowing which applies would help you to be more informed, and your expectations and your preparation for your finance and all that stuff would be more accurate when you are looking at proposal, bid, or estimate. My two cents.
Right. Yeah. Right. And in actuality, by knowing these differences, it actually helps you save money because you don't inadvertently think you're getting one thing and actually in actuality are getting something else. And all of a sudden, whoops, I needed to have that. Well, that's going to cost you more money. That wasn't in my estimate.
It's a lot easier.
Yeah, it wasn't. Oh, I didn't have that in my estimate. That'll be X more. Well, once you've already made the determination.
Every time you hear that line, you can hear your money fall out of your pocket.
Yeah, yeah.
Every time.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot easier to defend. And again, people ask a lot of questions. Han, what do you guys do for me during the construction process? Well, that's one of the things we do. We help you to understand what these bids that come in are and qualify them to make sure that they have all the pieces and parts, that they're bidding around the right proper set of documents, and they've covered everything so that you are able to compare apples to apples as opposed to having to deal with, I didn't know that was part of the project. I didn't see that in the drawings, or I didn't have that in my estimate. No, it's not an estimate. It's a bid. And you certify when you – typically we ask that bids are certified. You certify when we're talking to the subcontractor or the contractors. You certify during your bidding process that you have everything in there that's on the construction documents. So on page 7, detail 6, item number 3, it's noted there. So – it's in your bid as opposed to the other way around. Then that's what I mean. You get a bid based around a set of documents as opposed to an estimate based around somebody's idea of what they think you are saying. Much easier
or
to
worth,
tie.
Yeah.
Worth the investment.
Or worth they assume.
Well, that's right. They assume. And it's an investment, of course. It costs time and money for Han and I to do this stuff, but in the long run, it ends up saving you money very easily because you're not taken to the cleaners down the road in the situation where you hear the words, "Oh, I didn't have that in my estimate." Okay, Let's move to, what do we got? Dr. Matt down in St. Louis sent in a an email question, and he says, I want to move into a new retail space that I'm going to be leasing. How do I determine the amount that I need to go to the bank for approval? Well, Han, we hear that so many times, and you know we're
yes,
asked
we
that
do.
Question. We're asked that question almost, you know, the second
All
or
the time.
Third, yeah, the second or third sentence in a brand new conversation about. We get a call or we call a doctor and say, what would you like to do? Well, I'd like to do this. I'd like to do that. So how much do I have to ask the bank for? Well, that is a, it's a issue and it's a, I don't want to call it a problem, but in reality, it's something that has to be determined. Obviously we all know that, a lot of times our wishes of what we'd like to have don't always match up with the available cash that we can get our hands on from a lending institution. I don't know, Han, we haven't had a single client in all the years we've done this that has basically had all the money in the world and can do just about anything that they wanted to do. So we all have budgets. We all have to have a budget.
Yeah, this is 2020, little Jim. I'm open to you know, to have the kind of client that say, I print my own money, make it sing.
Yeah, but unfortunately, if they print their own money and it's not the government, we're in trouble. Now,
that's right.
Here's the answer to that question, and it's a complicated one. We solve that problem by our unique process. And why do I say that? Well, because we've heard it so many times, we tailored our process to be able to help you solve that problem. So that's why we break up our design process into two pieces. The first being the preliminary design, a very small investment by you to allow us to design the initial floor plan, site plan, the initial information so that you have something that is tangible. It's a design that a contractor can look at and give you a cost estimate. But it's based around a document, all right, not just a wild guess or a thought of what he heard or she heard. It's actually a document. You know, it says it's going to be of this size. Here's the operatories. Here's the lobby area. Here we're going to have sterilization. We're going to have a lab. Here's doctor's offices. All the stuff that you would see within the facility. Here are the sizes of what those spaces are. If it's a new building, in your case, Doc, it's not going to be because you're going into a retail space. But if it was a new building, there'd be a site plan. They would see, okay, here's how many parking spaces, here's the area that's going to be disturbed, all that stuff. It then allows a contractor to give you a cost, which we call a probable cost.
Probable cost, yeah.
Yep, a probable cost, which is pretty close. They're usually within 10%. And that probable cost is what you would take with your design documents, the initial design documents, our first step, you take that to the bank and you say, okay, this is what I want to build. This is where I want to build it. I have this team as my architect and I've got a probable cost from this builder. When you do that, the lending institution will then look at those documents and say, okay, this doctor really has his stuff together. He knows what he's doing. And they will give you a approval based upon what you want to accomplish, what your goal is, what your project's going to be, as opposed to the other way around where you walk in and say, how much can I get? Well, that might be great if you're a 25 or 30 year veteran, have got an extremely profitable practice that you want to do something, maybe your second or third building, and the banking institution will jump all over themselves to keep you as a client because you're very valuable to them. If you're a young doctor who's maybe out 2 or 3 years, just starting out, still dealing with all those wonderful debts, all those other things, you look at that and you walk in there and ask them the question, how much can I get to do my due practice? That's not the right way to do it, because they're going to look at it from the wrong direction and they're going to give you the least amount possible. And a lot of times it's not enough. But you walk in prepared, showing them what you want to accomplish. You know what you're doing. You've got these team members that are part of it. You have a much better chance and opportunity to be able to get what you're trying to accomplish and get approval to move forward. I mean, we've done shows and we've talked with lending institutions. You'll go back and listen to some of our podcasts about how lending institutions love to have dentists as their clients, because historically dentists, you know, don't go belly up. Dentists do not not pay their bills. They, you know, financially they're great, great assets to have on the book from a lending institution. On what I miss, if anything.
Well, I think there is another area that probably worthwhile covering too. Again, a lot of our client will come and they don't have anything. You know, they may have a site, they may have a space, approximately, you know, square footage and so on and so on. There's two ways that they possibly can get a number. And often the miscommunication from the banking institution is that the institution would say, I need you to give me an estimate of what, how much it's going to cost to do the project. For us, to get a project cost, it depends on the level of finishes and how detailed it is. It could be, you know, and there's clarification I need to have between the financial institution and the borrower, the doctor. Is that how much information do they need? Because some institution would do their own you know, project takeoff to see how much the project would cost to do the building and stuff like that. But the you know, the information that when I heard term like you know, I need a bid and how much it costs, that usually means that they're looking for a complete set of packet of drawing that have been designed, engineered, and ready and are in the bidding process. So you have, you know, everything. But usually a financial institution, you know, institution, when our client comes to us, what they're looking for is the probable cost. The number that I acquire usually involve two different processes. One that Jim described, we come up with, we do a layout where, you know, that may include the building and the site and all that stuff. So there is quantifiable information, tangible information that the contractor can look at and do their probable cost estimate. And it gives you a number that would be more likely how much you're going to cost. And then they fine-tune it once we go into the engineering, the detailing, and creating the construction document. The other process that Jim didn't mention was sometimes the client will go to a design-build contractor. They don't necessarily create any documentation. They just, from historical, they say, you're looking for a 3,000-square-foot office. They have, you know, 6 treatment room. This is how much it's going to cost. In fact, I actually work with a construction, a contractor. I say the way he does estimate is he don't care what you have on the drawing. He he allocated $35,000 construction costs for each operatory. So that worries me, okay, because detail matters. So from a design-built contractor, it's mainly done historical. They don't necessarily have any drawing, and they give you a number, and that number can be too much, too little. You won't know until after you sign the contract. And then you can find then, and then by then, it's up to you to find out where can you get more money to do your project. Jim, I think, did I cover everything?
You did, actually, and that's the scary part of it. And actually, this question dovetails very, very well with your first question dealing with, you know, bid, estimate, and proposal. So, and you can see how easily these terms get mixed up, and if you put them in the wrong place, you end up getting something that was not what you wanted, and then all of a sudden you've got a number that's the wrong number that, you know, results in a situation. We've seen it happen a lot.
All the time.
Doctor comes to us and says, I guess I need to go back to the bank and ask for more money. Well, you know, it's a situation where you didn't have the right documents at first. You know, if you follow our process, you have the right documents. When you have the right documents, then you can pretty much be rest assured that there will be enough to accomplish what you need to accomplish, and you never get into that situation where you have to, you know, effectively go in and do everything you can to get additional funds to keep the project going, kind of stuff.
And that's usually not fun to do that. You know, it's not very fun. Stressful. Okay. So the detail matters. We like to move forward with a document that we can use, that everybody read, you know, reading and working from the same thing. Otherwise, it leaves too much assumption, and those assumptions usually have a price tag, and the only person that write the check to cover those price tags are you.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Everybody have to, have to read from the same document, bid from, everybody get the same question, everybody get the same information and all that stuff. So that way the number are apple to apple, regardless what it is. Okay. Mm-hmm. Cause you're working from the same stuff. Hey, Jim,
what's your next question?
Are we ready for the next one?
Yeah. What's your next one?
The next question, this is straight out of the great state of Texas. So in the state of Texas, there is no required inspection during construction of the project, which is scary, okay? Absolutely scary, because the state assumed that the builder, the contractor, is working from a thoroughly drawings. So they, you know, as long as they follow a set of drawings that are thoroughly done by architects and engineer, there shouldn't be any problem. There's no need to do any inspection, right? That scares me. All right. So, but anyway, I say that the project is done. And they have received the certificate of occupancy, so they're open for business. And there was some question about the, whether the electrical wiring was provided to meet the hospital grades. Now, a little bit more background on the project is that it is a design-build project. In the state of Texas, a project under 5,000 square feet, a commercial project, does not require the service of an architect. I don't know why. The project was designed. All the engineering work, all that stuff is under the control of the contractor. So the assumption is that if the drawing stated that, you know, all the wiring, the outlets and all that have to meet the National Electrical Code and so on. And there is no inspection. Okay, let me remind you that again. And the only person that's responsible for the correctness of the construction process, the material, and who have control over every aspect of that project is the contractor. So if the, in this case, there's no architect, but if the engineer provide what he provide and the contractor install what they install, and if the end product does not meet code, who is responsible for repairing it? Even though there's no inspection required, they received a certificate of occupancy. What kind of mess is this that the owner is facing, Jim? And who would you think be responsible for correcting the deficiency in the code? Because they already received the certificate of occupancy, and there is no inspections.
Right. Well, in your question / synopsis, things that scared me the most were there's way too many ifs, and then on top of that, the issue of who's responsible. And the bottom line, it's a very stark answer, but the doctor is. The owner of the facility is the responsible party. Everything falls on your shoulders, whether you like it or not. Now, sure, you may be able to take this to court, try to sue the builder, go through the whole legal process to remedy or at least recoup some of these cost damages that you may receive because you have to go back in and redo a bunch of stuff, repair some things, whatever. But that in itself is just a mess because obviously you're paying good money to legal teams to be able to fight this issue out. And we all know what happens when you end up going to court. Very rarely does one side come out way over ahead of the other side. And in essence, everybody loses. And you lose time, you lose money, you know, it's just frustrating. So you want to do your very best to stay out of that situation, but it is a possibility. But bottom line is the owner is responsible for that. And the other thing that's very important in this little question synopsis is that just because the item might be an electrical outlet, and the wiring to that outlet, maybe those two things are deficient. You can't take that out of the equation and isolate just that. To repair that becomes, there's multiple layers. You have to open up the wall. You have to get in there. You may have to replace wiring. You may have to replace equipment, be it outlets or switches or even breaker boxes. Those kind of things. All of that has to be opened back up again, and then it has to be fixed. Then it has to be covered back up again, re-drywalled, patched, repaired, painted. Then on top of all of that, remember, Hans said, you've got a certificate of occupancy. You've occupied the building. What did you lose? You lost production time. We've talked about that before. Production time. How many bucks per operatory per month? About $25,000 to $30,000. Yeah. If you've lost that, you'll never get it back. And again, sure, you could try to sue for it. And, you know, the question is, good luck. We hope, you know, you come out at least with something, but you're never going to get that back. So it's just a scary situation. and all the liability and all the risk and all the responsibility falls on you, the doctor, the owner of the building.
Jim, there's because the state doesn't require inspections. It doesn't require the services of the architect. And in this case, all the engineering aspect for the project is hired by the general contractor. Would you say, that the remedy and a way to protect yourself from being in in this kind of scenario is that when I both you and I work on various different projects in our history, and I have not run into a talented engineer that can design buildings. Okay, they are basically serve as a support on the project. If you are in a state where the engineer can seal the drawing, that maybe be designed by him, or by a drafter at the that work for the builder, and so on, would it be beneficial for the client, the owner of the project, to have his own architect and to have his own engineer separate from the contractor, so that there is some oversight and protection for himself or herself? Would you recommend that?
Yes, without a doubt. And we call that the checks and balances. The system works the best when there's multiple layers of checks and balances, so that you have advocates. You have Han and I, the architect. You have our engineering team. We're your advocates. We're there for one reason during the construction process, and that's to observe and provide a checks and balances to make sure that what was designed, what was called out, is in fact what the contractor is putting in place. And we do that in multiple ways. So providing full service architectural work during construction is, we call it the last line of a defense. And you may say, well, this isn't an adversarial arrangement. Well, actually, it is an adversarial arrangement. We can still be adversaries, but also be nice to each other. But it is required to be able to at least maximize your possibility of getting exactly and everything that you thought you were going to get, and also make sure things aren't missed. So we do that during the shop drawing process. You can go back through one of our podcasts. I think we talked about that. But shop drawings are where the builder gives us paper documents that calls out all the stuff that he's going to be or she's going to be putting into the building. So in this particular case, we're talking about hospital-grade outlets and fixtures and wiring. That would be specified in the shop drawing. The shop drawings are delivered to us. We review them. They're given to our engineers. They review them. They'll check to see, yes, it is in fact hospital grade. So they're going to be installing what we specify. Then that's given back to the contractor. The contractor then signs off on that, approves it, and gives it to his subcontractor. So there's multiple layers of checks and balances, and everybody knows that this is what needs to be installed. This is what was on the drawings. This is what you're going to install. And then this is what gets installed. Okay. Then the result being that you actually get the hospital-grade wiring, the hospital-grade outlets and fixtures, and you don't have the problem of, oops, I didn't get what I needed and I have to go back and repair it. I think we've talked on so many times about how in the construction world, it's so much easier to solve the problems before they're built. It's so much easier to solve and correct something or make sure it's done right the first time as opposed to doing it wrong, tearing it apart, putting it back together again to get it right. You will spend a multitude of money trying to do it the latter. So we don't want you to do that.
You lose production time. You lose gray hair. I mean, the check and balance part is important. Yes, you should invest into having that to protect yourself and to have experts that actually have knowledge that you didn't have to watch, you know, to watch over the project. And Jim's right. It's an unfortunate thing. Often in the field construction, the relationship between architects, engineers, and the contractor are deemed adversarial, but it's not. It doesn't have to be. The whole process is very, heavily team-related. We work in a very tightly, highly collaborative type of relationship. The only time it becomes adversarial is when you catch a contractor doing things that are contrary to what they have agreed in the contract. That is the only time that I find that it becomes two guys in a ring, in a fighting ring.
Us against them, yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead, Jim.
No, I'd say, it is just crucial to be able to do that. Let me throw this one at you, Han, because I want to get this question in for you, and I think this is a good one for you. This is from Dr. Mark up in New York. He said, you guys have talked so much about preparing drawings that can be reviewed for permits. I'm confused. Who's responsible for getting the permit? Is it the architect? Is it the contractor? Is it me? What's your thoughts on that, Han?
I think it depends on the working relationship on the project. It depends on the contractual relationship on the project. There's a municipality that would allow the owner of the project to submit the drawing for a permit, because after all, the owner would be the one who paid for it. In one way or another, from time to time, the architect can also submit the drawing for a permit. Naturally, the set of drawing will be accompanied by a check for the fees, for the review fee and all that stuff by the city. The check is issued by the owner. Again, the owner is going to pay for it in one way or another. If the project is bid, completely bid, you may not have the contractor selected yet. So the permitting process could take 2-3 weeks or longer. To wait until after the project has been awarded to the contractor for them to submit the drawing for a permit, it would add a few weeks, if not months, to the project. Okay? What we normally do, we bid and we and submit the permit at the same time. So those that's responsible could be any of us, but often it's the owner or the architect. Because simply most of the project that we're involved in are designed, bid, and built. So the contractor may not been awarded the contract, therefore we don't know who it is until, you know, the contract's awarded. Once the contract's awarded, then the contractor would be added to the document that has been submitted with the city, and he or she would go down, pick up the drawing, and pay for whatever left required by the city. So the answer is, it depends, but it's usually can be the owner or the architect. If the if the contract had been hired early on, and so on, then the contractor would do that. But for us, usually it's one of us, the owner or the architect. The world that we work in nowadays is all usually digital and electronic. The permitting process has been becoming more streamlined, and it can be done electronically. So it's becoming easier and easier to do that. Jim, did I answer your question?
Actually, yes, you did. You're really close, and I'm only going to add a couple things.
Yep.
It is really, like we were just talking about, it's a collaborative effort. So to specifically say one of those three entities is responsible is actually not possible, because it's actually all three of those entities are responsible for getting the permit. We each have a role. Han and I prepare the documents. We prepare them for submission, and they get submitted to the plan review process. That's the beginning of the permitting process. I'm looking at a commercial building application right here on one of the projects we just finished up, and we submitted for plan review. The first entity that they ask for, property owner. Okay, that's you. You're going to be listed on that. The second entity they ask for is architect. That's us. Our information is on there. The third entity they ask for, contractor. Information about them. Address, person of contact, phone numbers, emails, the whole nine yards. So what happens in the process, we submit the documents for you as your agent, prepare the necessary paperwork. Then the builder, once they're selected, if they are selected before the permit is complete, the plan review and permit is completed, would then go and pick up the permit and pay for it, usually is then reimbursed contractually through their arrangement with you. They'll reimburse by you for that. So, you know, again, it's a collaborative effort to be able to accomplish getting your permit to be able to start your construction. Okay, Han, what do you got? What's your next question?
My next question. This is from Dr. Andrew out of Missouri. It's in a historical building, and it's in a, you know, he has an existing practice, and it's going to expand into the next bay because he's a tenant. The question is it worthwhile to change the structure between the two bays so that it gives him more freedom to garner a better, more efficient and utilization of the of the space if he altered the structure? Is it worthwhile? Is it something that's advisable? What can you say?
That's a really interesting but also extremely difficult question to answer because it's so specific. Each project of this kind of thing, and Han, you and I have done this. We've done this.
Oh, I love
this
stuff.
You know, numerous times. Have dealt with historic buildings, have dealt with historic structural issues, and dealt with the feasibility of whether it has. But there's three components to this question that need to be answered. You need three team members to be able to answer this question. Number one, you need an architect. Okay, so you need to know what you want to do, how you want to accomplish it, what goes where, what you need to adjust or change. Number two, you'll need a structural engineer because specifically they're talking about reworking the structure to be able to open it up. So that means probably taking away some walls. Historic structures were typically bearing walls. So you may be adding columns and beams and all kinds of fun, wonderful things that back to that original, one of the questions we had, you could do just about anything. It's a matter of what it costs. And then the third entity that you need as part of this team to be able to make the to answer your question is going to be a contractor or a builder. That contractor or builder is going to give you the cost. So, you know, we design the layout. The structural engineer says, okay, it's feasibly possible. This is what has to be done to be able to make it stay up. And then the contractor gives you the cost and what it would cost to be able to accomplish that. If any one of those three players are not part of that team, you will not get an accurate answer. You are opening yourself up to a big problem. You have to have all three. And they have to work together to be able to answer your question, is it feasibly possible? Because it may work perfectly for Han and I. We can design a great layout. But if it doesn't or can't structurally be opened up, or it costs $2.5 million, then it's a no-go. Now, if it's a situation where, all right, the structural engineer says, yep, I can solve that, no problem. I'll put in this giant beam. I'll put in these new columns. I got to run these columns down to the basement. We're going to dig new foundation piers and put in large foundations down in the basement. It works. It'll look great. Everything works. But the contractor, again, says, yeah, but it's going to cost you, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars. And, oh, by the way, I've got to shut your practice down for 6 months because that's how long it's going to take. So there's all those factors into answering that question. Is it feasibly possible? It's a difficult one to say. It's a specific to your specific project. And sometimes the answer is no, you can't do it. Or no, you shouldn't do it because there's no return for that investment, unfortunately. On other times, it's absolutely, yes, it can be done. And it's not too bad. You only have to shut your practice down for a little bit. And the cost isn't too unaffordable. And you end up with a magnificent space and you're still within your historic building. On.
Yeah, I think a good start for this discussion or this exercise is that you work with designer and our architect that are very knowledgeable. Solid knowledge, not just theories. Okay, so that they can solve problems on the fly. This particular discussion, the project, the design was done by a supply company. They don't have the skill set. They don't have the intellect and the technical knowledge to even have a discussion so that they can help and facilitate the design requirement with the engineers, with the contractor and things like that. So having the right, the right team member on your project that has the know-how is really important. It's just not something that you just hand over to anyone who can punch keys on a computer. Okay? It's important. It's very important to do that, to have the, have the right team. But Jim's right. The discussion, the consideration should be, is it doable? And, what is the cost and effect? And ultimately, how much it costs? And if all those questions and topics have been discussed and considered thoroughly, and then it allows you the insight, being informed enough to make the right decision for your expansion. Jim?
Absolutely. Juan, did you have one more question? If not, I do.
This is yours. Go ahead.
Okay, perfect. Because we've got a few more minutes, about five more minutes, and I wanted to squeeze this one in. We've got a Dr. Katie from out in Colorado. She says, I'm going to be adding four operatories to my existing six. Do I really need an architect who specializes in dental facilities? Don't I end up spending more money that way? Well, I guess, Han, I'll let you have the first shot at it. Then I have a few comments.
The first question would be, do you need an architect? Okay. Yes. And predominantly, majority of the commercial project, renovation, new addition, and so on, that exists in the United States, with the exception of a few states, such as Texas. The service of an architect is a must-have. The more specific, because you are a dentist working with a dental facility, an architect with dental experience would be invaluable for your project. Expansion, renovation, and things like that. I think both Jim and I are kind of sick in this way, that it challenges you. I find that working on a project where there's mysteries of, how the pieces and parts come together, it really challenges you to work beyond the norm, outside of the box. So, so you have an architect on the project. Make sure that they have the experience in that they've been in a few working with renovation projects and stuff like that, so they can help to do things at a more value level. So the answer to the first question is, do you need an architect? Yes. Should you have an architect with dental experience? You should. Maybe it's a little biased on our part, but I think it would help to make things a little bit a lot easier and a lot less stressful. Jim, do you want to handle the second part?
Yeah. Han, it's very biased on our part, but that's okay because it's the right answer.
Yeah.
Yes, you need to have an architect. You need to have an architect who specializes in dental facilities. And the answer is no, it will not cost you more. In actuality, it will probably cost you less. Additions are one of the most complicated construction design problems that we get involved in, because there's, Han, you touched on it, there's that unknown. You really don't know what was built before, and we're trying to put something and attach it to, build it adjacent to, install it beside, so that the result is it looks like it's always been there, it works together, it flows, it functions, the systems work, the electrical is tied in, the plumbing's tied in, all the things work together. The last thing you want to have happen is you want to have an existing building, an addition that's plunked onto the side of it, and the two look like they are night and day. One was built, 50 years later from the other, and they're foreign to each other. I mean, the aesthetics of that is, the question that everybody looks at that and go, what happened here?
Ew.
Ew.
Yes.
What is that? And so, instantly, remember our discussion a long time ago in one of their podcasts about first impressions and how the first impression of a new patient looking at your building when they walk up to it is their first impression of your service as a dentist. You don't want to have that first impression be, what the heck is going on here? Because the next thing is they're going to say, what the heck is going on in my mouth? And you want to do what? And cost what? It's a losing scenario. So you definitely
Jim, the discussion we have pertaining to the additions and things like that, we have this often. The main thing is functionality and efficiency of the add-on have to be right. Okay, so often we see projects where they say future addition, and all you see is a box. Okay, that box contained, it's like the Pandora box. If you didn't have all of your answer questions, it's going to be frightful when you open it. So addition is complex. Besides the aesthetic, the functionality of the project once it's merged together have to work. Because it's very obvious when you walk into a building and you look and you say, oh, this is must be the addition because it's a really weird place for the door, or it's a really weird height for the building. You know, why is there steps and things like that? So many things that could go wrong if you don't have the people that can think and chew gum and walk at the same time working on your project. Jim?
Yeah, I mean, the worst thing you want, the ultimate goal when we do an addition to an existing building is that when we're done, no one can tell that the addition was done after the fact. The building is cohesive. The thing flows nicely. Everything looks like it has been integrated properly. And it just, it's a 10 operatory space as opposed to a 6 and a 4. Now,
so it costs.
Yeah, I want to add one thing in that having to do with the issue of cost. The cost is, yes, you spend more money on having an architect who specializes in dental facilities who also understands the complexity of an addition over just having a design build firm or a contractor or some other entity create your design. But where you save the money is in by having that expertise, by having that specialist, we put together a final solution that's more cost effective, that works properly, and doesn't have the pitfalls that when they start construction, you get a contractor coming to you and saying, there's going to be an extra here because of this item. Oh, we got an extra here because of that item. We have an extra here from the one or two extras can effectively destroy your budget and will more than cost what a specialized architect like ourselves will charge you in the way of fee. So you can't look at us as a fee of our fee versus the fee of a design build company or a contractor, as opposed to our fee and what you're getting in the way of savings in the overall total project cost.
Compared to things that you might be relatable to. It's like going from, a film base X-ray to a digital base X-ray. Okay, if you work with have the right tool, the right technology, it just makes your life a lot easier. So, you know, invest into the appropriate services would just make the project easier. More economical, and the end result would be much more fluid and cohesive.
Absolutely.
Jim?
Absolutely. Well, we went a few minutes over. Sorry about that, but I think it was important to be able to get that clarification in there. Again, thank you for joining us. Thank you for being part of our show, and please get those email questions in. We'll have another one of these shows in the next 2 or 3 episodes. I don't know exactly when, but we're just thankful that you're spending at least the hour and a few minutes with us, and hopefully it was informative. For that, Han, I'll let you have the last word.
I always have fun. Appreciate you taking an hour of your time and spending it with us. Until next time, have a great evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.